Chapter 24. The Siglig. Mona Chess, Elena announced to the companions, as they came to the end of the long straight corridor, open to the night sky but still lined with multicolored fairy fire. Stepping out behind her, Catti Bree was greeted by a sight very different from that of Shellobel, and she could only think of the first time she had looked upon Menzo Berenzon for any type of comparison. Elena had told them that Mona Chess was a bit larger than Shellobel, but at first glance it appeared much larger. Perhaps it was because this burrow wasn't split down the middle by a prow of stone. Perhaps it was the construction of the dwellings here, the whole of the burrow punctuated by taller structures constructed of the magical blue and white ice, some reaching almost halfway up the towering glacial walls with their minarets and spires. All of the facades danced in waves of green and purple, reflections of the sky above, and still they were lined with fairy fire of all colors, accentuating the turrets and sweeping stairways, the columns and the decorated windows. "So much like Menzo Berenzon," she said quietly. "Oh, a silvery moon," Jarlaxle added, "if you put the two together." "Mona Chess was originally the whole of Caladay," Elena explained. "The other burrows were set for defense and as staging grounds for patrols, much as we use Kaskat today. Come, across the way is the Siglig, we are expected." Every side avenue they passed showed them more beauty. Every wall, every bridge had been sculpted with care, with myriad designs and perfect placement of highlighting magical light. The Avendrow greatly outnumbered the other peoples here in Mona Chess, which made sense since those not of Drow heritage had come to the city later, and mostly, from what they had heard, few by few. Soon after, the group turned down one wide lane, and Catti Bree didn't have to ask which structure housed the assembly, for across the way, at the far end of the boulevard and cut into the glacial wall, loomed the most wondrous edifice of all, stately and huge, with wide stairs leading up its front to a landing set with gigantic columns, thick as a frost giant and twice as tall. Magical lights circled the columns, but in a way Catti Bree had never seen before. Rather than simply a line of fairy fire, these seemed more like rolling globes of varying colors, running up and around, red chased by orange, chased by yellow, chased by green, chased by blue, chased by indigo, chased by violet. Indeed, it seemed as if she were watching multicolored sprites at play, trying to form a true rainbow, but never quite getting there. It took her a long while to break her gaze from the enchanting displays, and she shook her head in embarrassment at first, until she understood that Elena was patiently waiting for her and her three companions, who were similarly gawking. "The Siglig," Elena told them, "the seat of government and the great library of the Avendrow." They moved down the lane and up the steps, pausing frequently to note the reliefs carved into the triangular facing of the roof supported by the six columns. Such a contrast in those panels. Some showed battle with giants mostly, while others spoke of love and dance, a contrast so evident in Caladay. The sublime and the profane, the joy and the struggle. Like Kazkalchi, Catti Bree thought, remembering the Boscale army halting in the final battle, even though it cost them any chance to even the score or perhaps claim victory, in order to lend their voices to the champion of their opponents. Like Azudana herself and all the other soldiers of the four armies, wearing the broken noses, the missing teeth, and all the other scars of that battle still, though the magic had returned and they could have become again such beautiful drow. Only the serious wounds inflicted in the four battles of Kazkalchi had been treated by the priests. They were people of love and joy and beauty, in a land that demanded of them ferocity and strength. The great doors of the Siglig were open, with guards standing to either side, silent and still as the columns, resplendent in purple waistcoats above the black sealskin clothing common about Caladay. Their pole arms were of polished wood, capped with blue ice three-way heads, pointed tip, axe presented forward, and hammer opposite. The guards didn't even turn their eyes as the five passed. Elena led them into a maze of hallways and smaller chambers, all comfortably lit, the walls set with tapestries and paintings that evoked the same aesthetic as the panels on the roof facing outside. Multiple alcoves lined the hallways, every one set with a sculpture or a bust of a particular Avendrau, or simply a posing figure, some naked, some scantily clad, some in regal arms and armament. There were curate dwarves, too, and orcs, and Ulutian humans, all gathered in still and silent celebration. Each of the friends, even in Treri, kept pausing to consider one or another of the artworks. It occurred to Catti Bree that half of Luskin's docks, or all of Bleeding Vines, could fit in this one building. But still, every bit of it, every inch of wall, every corner, every stairway or door they passed, was carefully and lovingly designed, both functional and undeniably beautiful, provoking emotions and thoughtfulness. At last they came to a large set of decorated double doors, flanked by a pair of guards, attired and armed like those outside, and with two more Avendrau standing right before the doors, dressed fully in purple with silver trim, and each wearing a single white glove, on the left hand of the doorkeeper to the right, and the right hand of the doorkeeper to the left. They bowed as one and turned, each taking a doorknob in hand and drawing open the portal. They didn't blink. They didn't move beyond their prescribed ritual. They said nothing at all. Until the companions passed them, when one whispered, "Perte mie Zacnifane." Caught by surprise, Catti Bree turned sharply, and the Avendrau flashed a wink and a smile, then became again his stoic self. The chamber before them was the largest they had seen by far, and perfectly befitting the rest of this creation. Obviously, this was the Siglig itself, the assembly for what they called the temporal convocation. The room was rectangular, except that the far wall opposite the doors was concave, curving about in a semicircle around a raised platform. Bench seats escalated up that curving facade, and there milled scores of Avendrau, and a fair number of the other three peoples of Caladay as well. It took Catti Bree just a moment to make sense of the sashes each wore, for they reflected the colors she had seen at Kazkalchi for the armies of the four boroughs, and though the representatives were not separated into distinct groups, she soon discerned that the numbers of each color were an appropriate ratio to the number of the Kazkalchi onlookers, thus the population of each respective borough. On the center dais stood Mona Valrissa Jambuli, in her grand robes, flanked by two of the inquisitors who had spoken with the companions when they had first arrived in Shelobel, with the third of the trio, Galathe, standing before the dais on the main floor. Galathe turned as the five entered and pointed toward chairs of blue ice set on the floor several strides out before the dais. Alina led the companions to them and took a seat on one end, motioning for the others to sit. As soon as they did, Mona Valrissa clapped her hands sharply three times, calling the temporal convocation to order, and the representatives all found seats along the multiple levels of the arena. "Welcome to the Siglig," Mona Valrissa told them. "And our assembly, the temporal convocation. Holy Galathe, whom you know, will speak for this bench and this gallery. But let me first assure you that this is not an inquisition nor a trial of any sort. All who happen upon Caladay must come here to speak before us. It is a necessary formality, and an open discussion of your coming choices, nothing more. And be assured that we are well aware of your actions during your time here and your assistance. This Congress is grateful to you for directing our warriors to the hatchery of the Saladai, and impressed that you chose to lead the way into battle. Your exploits have not gone unnoticed." She paused and smiled warmly at them, and Catti Bree thought it sincere. "Holy Galathe," Mona Valrissa prompted. "I trust you are all rested from our great expedition," the paladin began. "Your single transgression in not telling us of your encounter with the giants and the Saladai is understood and excused, as you have more than corrected the issue. And so I must echo the words of Mona Valrissa. This is no inquisition. I do not expect that you are surprised by our caution here in Caladay, or ignorant of the purpose of this meeting. I will guide you through this assembly. Mona Valrissa might take the floor, as others might be recognized by her if there is a pressing matter they wish to inquire of you. But please rest assured that you are not among enemies here, nor judges. None in attendance may speak without the recognition of Mona Valrissa, except for me and for you. Any questions, any additions, anything at all you feel should be said, please—" "I understand," Artemis and Treri interrupted. Catti Bree and the others turned abruptly to regard the man, whom they all expected would be the least likely of the group to jump in. but Caddy Bree figured it out as Intrary went on, realizing that his somewhat rude interruption of Gallifrey was done more to measure the reaction of the gathering than because his thoughts could not wait. Also, the first remark in such a setting was always the hardest to voice, she knew. Intrary had just broken that emotional spell of silence for all of them in this intimidating place, whether intentionally or not. For that, Caddy Bree was grateful to him. "I understand the purpose, I mean," he went on. "This is akin to the gaius my companion Caddy Bree accepted from you, a continuation of that which you deem necessary for the security of Caladay. We may leave, but on your terms alone." Gallifrey nodded. None in the audience gasped or seemed surprised or annoyed at all by Intrary's interruption, Caddy Bree noted. A good sign. "The choice we must soon put to you is straightforward," Gallifrey explained, "and yet not. You are welcome to remain here, to choose a burrow altogether as one household, or individually, or in any combination you decide, in which to make your home or homes. In short time, perhaps as early as conception verdant, the vernal sunrise, you will be acclaimed as full Caladaeans, with all rights of voice here in the Siglig, with all opportunities to become as you will and as you can achieve in trade, in art, in battle, or in governance." She paused and offered the four a little smile. "I hope that will prove your course." "And if we do not?" Intrary pressed, rather brusquely. He's pushing too hard, Caddy Bree thought, given the generosity of their hosts, and yet she wanted to know the answer to that too. "Then you will leave," Mona Valrissa replied, before Gallifrey could. "When you decide and when you are able. The winter draws deeper. The cold and snows will not relent. Beyond this place is cold death, I warn." She looked directly at Caddy Bree and added, "Unless, of course, you have a magical journey prepared. But this should be the discussion at the end of our session, not the beginning," Mona Valrissa decided. "We have other matters to attend before you make such a choice. There is no urgency here in any case. You may wander the ways of Caladay freely through the coming hours and 10 days, with but one condition that we must place upon you. A continuation of the magic muting gears," Caddy Bree stated. "I accept, and assure you that I alone among my party can perform the evacuation magic or whisper across the distances." Mona Valrissa and Gallifrey exchanged looks. Then the Mona nodded. "Distant whispers?" Jarlaxle asked Caddy Bree. "Messages to the south?" She nodded, not quite understanding his eagerness here. The mercenary reached for a chain around his neck and produced a small ornament hanging upon it. "A whistle," he explained to the assembly. "A whistle with which I can sometimes call to a faraway friend." He pulled it over his head and handed it to Alina, who seemed pleased. They all seemed pleased. "I did not know," Caddy Bree apologized, side-gazing at the ever-surprising rogue, and to Gallifrey, she added slyly, "You should inquire more deeply with this one, as he is ever the clever fellow." "Not so clever," Mona Valrissa said, and she turned to the man at her left, the inquisitor from Shellobel, who reached for a chain on his own neck and produced a whistle remarkably similar, indeed physically identical to the one Jarlaxle had just handed over. "The one we gave back to you would have only called a Muktef," Mona Valrissa assured Jarlaxle, who laughed in reply, as did most of the assembly. The rogue stood up from his chair and bowed low, sweeping his hat. "He wouldn't make that particular gesture if he knew what it meant up here in Caladay," Alina whispered to Caddy Bree, "not adding the hat sweep at least." Caddy Bree eyed her curiously, and the Avondrow priestess whispered in her ear, "I'll tell you later," in a very salacious tone. Caddy Bree figured in that moment that they'd never get Jarlaxle out of this place, and that, yes, he probably would have made the inviting bow in an even more exaggerated form if he knew the customs. "And the rest of our gear?" Jarlaxle politely asked. The Mona offered the floor to the male inquisitor, who stood up. "You'll find that everything else is as it was. This whistle is the only thing we withheld," he replied. "We do not understand the magic of it, other than that it is used to communicate across the miles. You understand, I hope, that we had to be certain, given our vulnerable situation here." "I have witnessed Kazkalchi, and now the fight at the caves," Jarlaxle replied. "Vulnerable is not a label I would affix to Caladay."
"We have learned to defend ourselves, yes,
But we are few in number compared to those that might come against us, Galathea said, motioning for the inquisitor to sit back down, which he did. We are not ignorant of the Southland. We know of Silvery Moon, of Cormyr, of Baldur's Gate, and of Great Waterdeep. We know, too, of the southernmost reaches of Kalimport. If all of Caladae moved to mighty Kalimport, the people there would hardly realize the addition. Your argument is noted, Jarl Axel conceded. But still, you could have simply withheld the whistle, could you not? Or spoken to me of it. Perhaps offering a Geas agreement as you fashioned with my friend here. You didn't have to go to such lengths to replicate it, unless, of course, you did so as a test. Tell me, Galathea. Holy Galathea, did you have a Mooktef on watch and at the ready to alert you if I chose to use the device? Caddybri held her breath, but relaxed almost immediately, as Galathea and many others of the assembly took no offense and indeed laughed in reply. Well reasoned, Jarl Axel, the paladin congratulated him. A small test, as it turns out, and one where you confirmed our confidence in these weighty matters when you simply admitted to having such a necklace, and one you have not used. Mostly we held your whistle longer simply because we cannot construe the magic of it, and now that our own spell powers have fully returned, we wish to unravel the mystery. It is a curious item, I freely admit, was all Jarl Axel said of their befuddlement. I can contact only a single person with it, and then only if he happens to be listening at the time. He paused and chuckled a bit. And if he chooses not to ignore me. He hadn't mentioned psionics, Caddybri noted, for that was the basis of Kimuriel's whistle. She thought his omission of the mind magic curious, but began to wonder if there might be some other reason Jarl Axel would not want the Avendrow to know about the true nature of the item. Given what she and her companions already suspected to be the terms of departure, she had a hunch of what that reason might be. It will be returned to you, likely, Galathea told him, but yes, with conditions. Jarl Axel swept another bow, and Caddybri joined in the giggling. Elena put her hand on Caddybri's then, simply to lend support. A small but hardly unimportant gesture. You have told us several times that you seek Dumwil, our lost little doe, Galathea said. You tell us that you are convinced she is alive, and so you must go seek her. The sword, Jarl Axel began, but Galathea stopped him. You need not explain it again, and I have relayed to all of the temporal convocation that which you have told me of that sword and the connection you believe leads you to Dumwil. Their response in unity is the same that I said to you. Perhaps she is alive, but even if so, she is not what she was. We have seen this before. Once encased by the Cante, the victim becomes merely a physical extension of the monstrous magic, and the new joined being, uninhabited and victim, transforms into what we call the Endivi, the Overtaken, an undead creature controlled by the Sladi. Dumwil was encased, and that was many months ago, soon after the last conception verdant. But you can't be certain, Jarl Axel said. Galathea conceded that with a shrug. Dumwil was never a good friend to any of us, Jarl Axel admitted, though we, mostly Caddybri, know of her, and know well her family, who live in a great forest we call the Moonwood. Dumwil told us of them, Galathea replied. Yes, and she likely told you that she could never return because of her crimes, said Jarl Axel. She did, to some degree. We knew that it was not a good series of events that brought her to us. It was terrible, Jarl Axel assured them. But that is her story to tell, not mine. What I will say is that it was not Dumwil who did these things, but Dumwil under the domination of the sword Kazidea, the very same sword you returned to Zacnaphane. A prideful and powerful blade, Galathea admitted. And now, because of circumstance, Dumwil, freed of the sword, might find some redemption and do great good, said Jarl Axel. Good for a drow city with almost as many people as this one, a city on the edge of civil war. The crux of that war is the second house, Barrison del Armgo, the house of Dumwil Armgo, and of her father, who was a noble of the house but is dead now. She can sway them. She can turn them. By telling them of us, so you believe, Mona Valrissa Jambuli sharply interrupted. Jarlaxle seemed to have lost his voice. I... That she cannot do, Mona Valrissa flatly stated. That none of you will ever do, understand that. You must understand, Jarlaxle countered. What I speak of is everything to our people, yours and not just mine, in my homeland. We know quite a lot about your home, Jarlaxle, Mona Valrissa replied. But it is more than that, Jarlaxle protested. Do you know of Gauntlegrim, home again to the Delzoon dwarves? The Avendrow and others looked about, most shaking their heads. Of Luskin, the city of sails? Jarlaxle asked. Luskin, yes, said Mona Valrissa. That sounds somewhat familiar. It is a city just south of the frozen lands on the Sword Coast, Jarlaxle told them. A great port which is now under my direction. And with that guidance, it is becoming a center of commerce. Wondrous trade of wondrous items from such varied sources as would never have considered such arrangements before. With your white and blue ice magic, with your alterations of simple conjurations, with the clothing you wear alone, I could create great avenues of trade for you. There is nothing we desire from the world beyond Caladay, Mona Valrissa answered. What do you suppose you can offer? We have no need of your money or jewels or weapons or anything else. That which you treasure is not what we cherish. We survive, we thrive, we live in the highest joy, because we have made of this place that which we desire, as one and as each of us. But there is so much, pressed Jarlaxle, ever the salesman. From my home alone, from Menzo Berenzon, the city of the Spider Queen Lolth, Mona Valrissa cut him short. We know, Jarlaxle, of Menzo Berenzon, or at least of how it came to be and how it was doomed to fall. She struggled for a word. Vertupered, she decided. Doomed to corruption. In the Grand Dispersion, so say the histories, when the Drow peoples fled their elven cousins, they tried to leave the world that was ever shaken by the whims of kings and queens, of lords who claimed divinity, of churches that demanded fealty, of purest greed and callous projection, of damnable differences instead of celebratory diversity. In this time, several of the great clans traveled downward, what they believed the obvious path to security, into the Underdark. The stone ceilings and tunnel mazes provided ways for them to guard against great armies, of course. But alas, as with the cleaving of many of the dwarven peoples, sheltering in the Underdark meant settling near the barrier between our world and the lower plains, and so they were corrupted, vertupered. Even Ellen Quenthal, Caddy Bree whispered, and her friends heard her and turned to her. This was a bit of a confirmation, so it seemed, that the recounting of the memories of Evenel the Eternal was not far-fetched. Alas for the Drow and for the Duergar, Mona Valrissa was saying, when Caddy Bree turned her attention back to the Avendrow, but the Mona's voice trailed off. And now they have the chance to break free of that spell, Jarlaxle pleaded with her, with them all. Dumweel might prove critical in that effort. To shake off the curse of Lolth. It is not our fight, Galathay said. It cannot be our fight. But we will not stop you in your quest to find Dumweel. We will take you there to the lower caverns beneath the fortress of the Sladi, where she and many others were lost to us. There will be but one condition. Prepare your word of recall, Caddy Bree. But your destination will be Caladay and not the Southland. And accept the gas that will hold you to that. When we are agreed upon that, you may go to find your lost friend. And then? Caddy Bree asked. We will speak of that at the end of the Congress, Mona Valrissa reminded her. Caddy Bree tried to hide her grimace. Thoughts of Drizzt and Bree flooded through her. She knew that when she returned to Caladay from their rescue of Dumweel, she would demand that the Avendrow do whatever ritual or spell they needed to blur her memories of this place, and then, when they were satisfied, she would fly away to her home, with whichever of her companions decided to join her. It was a pleasant thought, and it was not, for the idea of forgetting this place, of never returning here with Drizzt and Bree, stabbed at her heart. Galathay nodded. Now we ask something of you in exchange for our hospitality. We would have you tell us your stories, of your homelands, of how you came to be together, of who you are, that our scribes may record your tales for our library, that our bards might put proper context on Perte, Miazaknifane. The unsubtle reminder made the request seem perfectly reasonable to all of them, of course. Are we wrong in expecting that your own tale might prove the longest and most interesting? She asked Jarl Axel.
He'll make it seem so, Entreri muttered, to laughter.
I am sure, Gallifrey replied.
I do not wish to bore the assembly, Jarl Axel said with obviously feigned humility.
We do not know much about you, Jarl Axel, but we strongly doubt that boring is a word often associated with you.
Would that it were, said Zaknafane. We'll starve in this room, Entreri moaned.
Caddy Breeges watched Jarl Axel taking it all in, truly in his glory here.
Very well, he said. I will tell you great tales of many lands, of heroic adventures and terrific battles, of dragons loved and demon lords destroyed. But I have a price.
Truly? Asked a perplexed Gallifrey.
I would think it already paid, Mona Valrissa stated evenly. But speak your ransom.
Jarl Axel waited, the hall thick with curiosity, if not tension. To either side of the floor, Eivindrau filed in and lined the walls, books in hand, ready to record. When they were all in place, pens at the ready, Jarl Axel let the suspense linger just a few moments longer before blurting out his price.
Persimmons, he shouted. Persimmons with cured muskox cheese, chased by shallow-belly ice wine. That is my price.
He is so good at this, Caddybree mumbled, as the whole of the Siglig reverberated with cheers and laughter. In a moment of tension, Jarl Axel had struck the perfect chord, and while he had them tittering and settling, before any could slow him, he launched into a long tale, the story of Jarl Axel, the story he enjoyed telling most of all. He began with his days as a houseless rogue in Menzo Baranzon, explaining in detail the structures of the noble families and the lesser families striving to become more powerful, but being ever careful, for if they gained too much, they would be obliterated in short order by those who desired no rivals. Caddybree watched the faces of the representatives, mostly of the Eivindrau, and she came to believe that, though they knew of Menzo Baranzon and had found out bits of information here and there, never before had they, this particular group at least, heard such details of the wild ways of the City of Spiders. Jarl Axel stressed how he had survived, forming Bregan de Earth. Caddybree was truly surprised that he disclosed his organization so openly. But then, what did he have to lose? The rogue turned about to regard Zaknafane as he described the battle between houses, wherein he had rescued Zak at the behest of yet another matron. And though he turned back to the assembly, Caddybree let her gaze remain on Zak as Jarl Axel detailed their time together, right up to the point when he alluded to Zak's sacrifice for the sake of his son. Zak nodded through it all. It was clear to Caddybree that he thought Jarl Axel to be offering an honest recounting, even if the rogue was surely leaving out a few details, like Zak's gory actions on the night Drizzt had been born. As soon as he finished that bit, Jarl Axel pivoted to the events that had led him to a life more focused on the surface world. At that point, Gallifrey stopped him. Mona has called a recess for dinner, she announced to the chamber, and to the four visitors she added. You have a side room prepared where your food will be brought. This seems a good time for a break in the tale. Come. When Mona formally dismissed the assembly, Gallifrey led them to one of the smallest rooms they had seen in the Siglig, although it was still quite large and comfortable. A long table was set with a dozen chairs, with plenty of room between them. Fine settings of white and blue ice were etched in various ways, beautiful designs of sled dogs and dancers, frozen waterfalls, and even a pair of grapplers in a grape-crushing battle.
You heard them, yes? The Grand Dispersion, they called it, Jarl Axel said after the Eivindrau servers filled the table with a wondrous bounty and departed. I don't know the timeline of this event, but it would seem that these drow have a view of history similar to what we heard from Evanel and Quenthel.
It makes sense, Caddybree said. She took a large serving plate from Zak, then paused a moment to consider the fatty slabs of baked meat, topped with a red and green sauce she did not know that smelled delicious. Why would the drow of Menzo Baranzon have gone down that path of violence and deceit, if so many are of different weal? How many did you know among you in all those years who truly loved Loth and the daily horrors of a city caught in her grasp?
There were plenty of zealots, do not doubt, Zack warned. They relished the power the infernal Lulf brought to them, and their cruelty was to them nothing more than a joyful expression of that power. But most, I expect, just went along, secretly loathing it all, Jarl Axel put in. What choice was there for so many? For Zack, for me, for Priestess Dabne, who doesn't even understand why Lulf grants her spells.
But there was a choice, Caddybri reminded him. I am married to one who took a different path.
Drizzt wasn't unique in leaving, and certainly not in wanting to leave, Jarl Axel replied. What was unique, to us at least, as far as we know, is that he made it and thrived.
Unique until your recent efforts, Caddybri said. She hoped Jarl Axel wouldn't bow at the compliment. After what Elena had hinted, she never wanted to see him bow again.
My son survived by sheer will, and then because he found such wonderful friends, Zack added with a warm smile to his daughter-in-law. This steak is delicious, Entreri told them through a mouthful of food. I don't even want to know what it is, and I really don't want to know what is on top of it.
Probably the hagfish mucus, Caddybri teased, and all three told her to shut up at the same time. Galathe entered the room then, declaring, The ransom paid. And Azudana, Emelian, Elena, and Vessi came in close behind, each with a bottle of ice wine in one hand, two or three smaller blue ice plates in the other, and after them, Aida, pushing a rolling cart overflowing with blocks of white cheese and persimmons.
Simply amazing, Caddybri heard Zack quietly say.
The conversation turned lighthearted when the Avendrow accepted the invitation to sit and join in the feast. And it really struck Caddybri just how easy all of this was, as if it were a joyous dinner with old friends. Too much so, she feared. She and her companions had come upon this place so unexpectedly, relatively a short time ago, and yet already it seemed as if bonds were being formed.
Was it all just an elaborate ruse?
But to what end? From the first meeting, the adventuring companions had never been in a position of advantage over their hosts. The Avendrow could have killed them out in the tunnels before they even got to Kaskat, and quite easily. But here they were, and there was no reason for such a display, for any of this, if the Avendrow were not as they appeared. If Caladay itself were some grand illusion, or worse, some grand deception. When she looked at Azudana, talking with Zack, the Avendrow woman so near to him, smiling and with a certain look so obvious in her lavender eyes, Caddybri knew she was being foolish here with her doubts. She had seen such fears as her own manifested before, after all, when Drizzt had been afflicted by the Faerzris, and had come to believe that everything he was being shown was a trick of the eyes. The secret is to dry the persimmon just so, she heard behind her, and she turned about to see Galathe holding another cheese-covered fruit chip toward her. The paladin motioned with her hand that she meant for Caddybri to take it, so she did, gladly, and Galathe produced a second one and held it up between them. I look forward to hearing your story most of all, she toasted. Caddybri likewise lifted her treat, then took a small bite, savoring the explosion of flavors. Why mine? Jarl Axel has lived a most incredible and long life, as has Zacnafane, and none have grown in soul more than Artemis and Treri. Because we are the most alike. And not simply because we are both women. Jarl Axel has not mentioned his faith in his telling thus far, and I do not expect that to change. He only mentions the goddess Lulf at all to rightly cast aspersions on the fiend, and I expect little on the matter of the gods from Zacnafane or Artemis and Treri. I would agree with that, Caddybri told her. But from you, I will hear the voice of Mialiki, a sister goddess to one I have pledged my life to serve. And through that perspective, I believe I will come to understand your friends and your land so much better. Though you'll never be able to visit that land. Who can say? Galathe replied, piquing Caddybri's interest. Perhaps a decade hence, I will wander the ways of your land and see again the face of Caddybri. I would like that, Caddybri replied. But tell me, in that event, would I even remember you? Galathe went quiet suddenly, her expression a bit pained. Maybe it will be just a feeling, a spark of knowledge to make you wonder if somehow we are old friends, though to you it will also seem as if we have only first met.
It couldn't be spoken more clearly than that.
Maybe we've met before, Caddy Bree answered. Perhaps you did come to my home once, long ago, and we did to you that which you intend to do to us.
Why would you? The paladin asked, in such a logical manner that Caddy Bree paused and considered her analogy.
What would the great cities of the south have to fear from an Avendrow enclave so far away?
Galathea continued quite seriously.
It was just a thought, Caddy Bree deflected.
She finished the delicious treat, then wiped her bottom lip with her index finger and scraped a piece of cheese onto her teeth, determined to enjoy every last bit.
Maybe you've been here before, Galathea said. Or perhaps there is more to reality than we can know.
Perhaps Mialiki will show me the way back here, Caddy Bree remarked.
What then?
Persimmons, of course, the paladin teased. The door opened then, and a sentry, the same one who had tossed the comforting remark at Zacnaphane when the group first entered the assembly chamber, announced, "The temporal convocation is now reconvening."
Galathea leaned in toward Caddy Bree.
"I do wish to hear your story. Be at ease and be comfortable, Caddy Bree. You are not among enemies."
"I know," she replied. And she wanted to believe that she did. And yet...
The other Avendrow rose and began collecting the plates. Galathea moved for the door, telling the companions to follow along. Rising from her seat, Caddy Bree glanced again at the smiling Azudana, her purple eyes locked on Zack.
"Does it still hurt?" Zack asked her, his hand coming up and almost, but not quite, touching her nose.
"You think me ugly?" she asked back melodramatically.
Zack laughed. "No, I just wonder if it still hurts. I would have expected that the priests would have tended to it by now."
"Soldiers wear the scars of Catscalchi for many days, sometimes all the way to Midwinter Deep," explained Vessi from across the table, and he pulled back his sleeve to show a tear in his forearm, of which he was obviously proud. "The aurochs have such sharp teeth," he added with a dramatic sigh.
"It does not hurt," Azudana said quietly to Zack, leaning in close, "as long as you are careful when you kiss me."
The weapon master hesitated, caught off guard, and the Avendrow laughed and spun away. Zack followed her departure until he turned enough to see Caddy Bree staring at him with an impish little grin. He shrugged, having no answer to that.
"Fight beside me in Catscalchi next year, Zacnaphane de Werden," Azudana called back, dancing out of the room, the others, except for Alina and Galathea, following her.
The remaining six went back to the assembly together and took their seats. As soon as the room was filled and quiet, Galathea asked Jarlaxle to resume his tale, which he did with great energy. Caddy Bree paid more attention now, for the mercenary was fast coming upon the part where her own story intersected. Jarlaxle told it faithfully, spoke of adventures he and Entreri had shared in the distant Bloodstone lands, and in the far, far south, tales that Caddy Bree had not heard before. He burst with pride as he recounted the rebuilding of Gauntlegrim and of Luskan and the great changes along the northern reaches of the Sword Coast. His voice rose in triumph as he told of the heroic defeat of the demon lord Demogorgon itself in the cavern of Menzo Baranzon, and of how Drizzt had become the spear for an entire city. He spoke somberly of the more recent war throughout the lands about Luskan, and, to Caddy Bree's surprise, he even told of the change of heart of House Baenri, and the magical web of heresy the two great priestesses had woven to steal the Driders from Lolth. In that moment, Caddy Bree feared that this whole setup of Caladay might be a machination of Lolth to elicit exactly that story and admission from her companions. But again the fear passed, and the Avendrow continued to act and react properly. And as she considered Jarlaxle's brutal honesty here, she thought it a good thing. Jarlaxle was being less than his usual cautious self. He was putting it all on the line, a reflection, she thought, of his own desperation that this not be an illusion, or some fever-induced dream. She thought it even a better thing when Mona Valrissa interrupted Jarlaxle on behalf of one of the representatives to ask a question that seemed to be on all their minds. What was this beast that he spoke of, this abomination he called a Drider? Caddy Bree watched carefully the expressions of the members of the Congress as Jarlaxle described the visceral horror of those beings, and she was glad of their disgust. Sometimes, she thought, things really were just as they seemed. By the time Jarl Axel finished, Mona Valrissa had to call a recess for some sleep. But they were all back together again very early the next day. Sacnophane followed Jarl Axel, since so much of their tales overlapped, and Jarl Axel's remained so fresh in the thoughts. Caddy Bree had heard many of his stories before, but from the point of view of her husband, who had played so prominent a role in them. He spoke of the not-so-little matter of his death, and of Zinkarla and his second demise, explaining the time when he was dead by simply stating that he had no memory of it at all. And now he was returned somehow, and glad he was, for he had met his new daughter, Caddy Bree, and his beautiful, half-drow, half-human granddaughter, now the joy of his life. After another delightful meal with the same group as the previous night, and Treri began his story, Caddy Bree tuned out a bit, focusing on her own life and what she intended to tell. But she was drawn back in almost immediately when she came to realize how open this always guarded man was being. He spoke of things in his childhood, dark things that Caddy Bree could not have imagined. He even truthfully recounted his first meeting with her, when he had taken her prisoner and dragged her across the land in pursuit of a halfling he had been tasked with kidnapping and bringing back to the far southland for the most extreme torture and execution. He was so open that it made Caddy Bree, and Jarl Axel too, she believed from watching his reactions, wonder if there had been more spread on the persimmons than muskox cheese, or perhaps the wine was stronger than they had believed. But no, she realized when Entreri came to the part of his enwrapping in the magical cocoon of the one called Sharon, the one they believed to be the physical manifestation of the concept of conscience. Artemis Entreri was telling the truth, because he saw that as part of his penance. And that truth coming from this man mesmerized Caddy Bree. She thought it as wonderful as Caliday and the Avendrow. She had never been fond of Entreri or even tolerant of him until recently. There had been times when she had scolded Drizzt for not killing him. But hearing him now somehow infused her with hope. Unexpected hope, but not unwanted. When her own turn came, Caddy Bree started in Icewind Dale with stories of her adoptive father, who was now king of Gontalgrim, and of Regis, and of her first meeting with Drizzt Do'Urden. So many adventures did she tell, and as she recited them, trying to be as brief and entertaining as she could, she found herself as amazed as any in the room at the sheer scope of her own life. When she got to her death, she looked right at Galathay, and for this interlude in the life of Caddy Bree, she took her time. For this was Iriladun, a gift, so she truly believed, from the goddess Mialiki. Galathay's eyes sparkled throughout the recounting, and on more than one occasion, Caddy Bree noted them brimming with tears. That moment, more than any other except perhaps the miracle at Catscalchi, convinced her that this was not some weird induced illusion, not a deception. Indeed, indeed, sometimes things really were just as they seemed. She went on to speak of her marriage to Drizzt, and then burst out in a huge smile to tell of Brianelle Zaharina Do'Urden, her little girl, her greatest joy, and the smile became strained, and she teared up at the mere mention, only then fully realizing how badly she missed her family. She looked again at Galathay when she finished speaking, the paladin offering her a sincere and approving nod. The room was buzzing with chatter for some time before Galathay called it to order and turned the floor back to Mona Valrissa. "We are most grateful again," she addressed the visitors. "The tales of the outside world remind us of our blessings here in Caliday. These insights are important, lest we take our bounties for granted. Wise were our ancestors. You express your desire to go and find Dumwil, and if this remains your chosen course, we will not stop you. Indeed, we will take you there. Dumwil was friend to Caliday too, and fell with many of our people beside her. But beyond the entrance of the caverns of the uninhabited, you will travel alone. Our losses there earlier this year still hurt us dearly, and we, unlike you, understand that which lies within. We will try to persuade you to a different course until the time we leave you, although we find your loyalty and your cause just and powerful. You understand our conditions for taking you to this place. Should any or all of you somehow survive and escape that cursed place, your next journey must, on your word, be back to Caliday.
Are we agreed?
Yes, they all replied, and Jarlaxle added, Back here, where you will steal from me all thoughts of this place, the most wondrous memories of my long story.
Where you will declare your choices, Mona Valrissa corrected him. It seems clear to us that we already know Catti Bree's decision, for it is one easily made.
But not without great lament, Catti Bree replied.
Mona Valrissa paused to acknowledge that, with a look of appreciation and endearment. She continued, saying,
Then go and rest and prepare. She called the assembly to adjournment. When you are ready to depart, simply ask and it will be done.
She raised her hands and clapped them together, and the assembled members of Calladay's Congress began standing and shuffling about.
Wait! Jarlaxle called out loudly, surprising them all, particularly Galathay, who was coming over to escort the friends home.
Wait, I beg, Jarlaxle continued. There is something else I must tell you, and I have come to know that it should be here and now, and not when we bid you farewell.
His tone was not light, indeed sounded grave, and Mona Valrissa clapped her hands again 3 times sharply, reconvening the convocation. The members hustled back to their seats, and the room quickly quieted.
What are you doing? Catti Bree asked Jarlaxle, but it was Zack who calmed her.
Helping them, I think, said the weapon master.
Mona Valrissa nodded to Galathay, who told Jarlaxle to please continue.
When we went to the cave, we found riddles, the rogue began. The eggs, the polar worms. Why would Slotty and Frost Giants be caring for such a hatchery as that? Now, you supposed it to be a secret army of monsters that they could send against you, and perhaps you are right. But I think it might be something more.
He paused there and paced for a bit, clearly trying to sort out his thoughts.
Everything is in balance about us, he continued. This is true in the Underdark, but even more apparent here on the surface of Toril, with oceans and lakes, forests and fields. So this glacier, Cadiz, if you will, has stood for centuries uncounted, longer than your stories. Now you are speaking of its advance, taking Catasola and creeping toward the tunnel leading to Shellobel, correct?
We send teams out into the tunnel to cut it back, but yes, it is moving, slowly, Galathay replied.
At its rate of advance, it will be 100 years or more before it comes near to Shellobel,
Mona Valrissa explained. It still has not fully taken Catasola, but there is little of value there any longer.
Your lifeblood is the hot springs that you call the River Calladay, Jarlaxle said. Without it, you could not live here. You would have to abandon this place and find a new home.
If the glacier continues its advance, said Mona Valrissa, seeming perturbed.
If I'm correct, it will. I think the Slotty are doing it, Jarlaxle stated, and that began 100 whispered remarks and exchanges throughout the assembly.
The Remerhazes, he went on, and he paused again, and Catti Bree could see him rewinding his thoughts to the background of his explanation.
Why do the hot springs flow here in the midst of Cadiz? Is it a deep volcano, perhaps, or a primordial, or great elemental god of fire? Did your people happen upon a godly struggle locked in stasis, where Cadiz and such a primordial of fire had fought to a standstill that leaves you with the streams of hot water that provide such life to Calladay?
Perhaps, but we don't think so. In the abandoned Ulutian town, Catti Bree reached through her ring and found no sensations of any such second beast.
So possibly it is a volcano far below, feeding the fire, melting the ice in these areas that the hot springs might flow. Or maybe it is something else. In the Underdark, there are vast chambers of huge crystals. We call them the breathless rooms because, well, if you went in one, you would understand. I've seen only one and from afar, and even from that great distance I could feel the heat emanating from the place. To remain inside such a chamber would kill me or you or any of us.
But not a Remerhaz, Galathay put in, nodding.
Do you recall what the infant worms were chewing in the hatchery?
Crystals, Galathay answered.
Jarlaxle, what are you proposing here?
Mona Valrissa demanded.
Take some miners and go through the tunnels to Catasola, he explained. Dig, and pray have many warriors looking over the miners, ready to do battle. I believe you will find vast chambers of crystals, and there on the edge of Khadija's encroachment, you will find the work of the Sladi and the form of polar worms. They are unbalancing the land to allow the growth of Khadij, a change that will drive the Avendrau and all the others from this place you call home. Kill their Remorhazard and you will deal a great blow to the Sladi. The assembly held perfectly quiet then, a decided hush, with the gathered representatives looking to each other and ultimately toward Jarlaxle. Of course we cannot be certain, Jarlaxle finished. But this is what I believe might well be happening, given what we saw on the strange hatchery. Galathay moved to Mona Valrissa, the other inquisitors closing in for a private huddle. Jarlaxle, all of you, we are most grateful that you have shared these thoughts, Mona Valrissa said at length. If there is nothing more, you are dismissed to prepare for your journey. The temporal convocation will remain in session until we have come to agreement on how to respond to the suspicions you have shared. Certainly, we will investigate. If your fears prove true, then Kaladay owes you a great debt, my friends, Galathay added. She walked over, the other inquisitors beside her, and with Elena, led the companions from the Siglig to prepare for their coming adventure.